Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Saba. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the DESA call on the 16th of August 2012. On the call today, we have Mikey O'Connor, Sarah Langdonald, Olivier Crépin-Leblanc, Rick Keller, Georgia Sarasaki, Julie Hammer, Marcella Mattioli, and Wim de Gazelle. We have apologies from Don Blumenthal, Mark Costas, and Andre Thompson. From staff, we have Julie Headland, Patrick Jones, and myself, Natalie Peregrine. I'd like to remind you all to please state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you, Mikey.
Thanks, Natalie. Welcome to the call. First up, the agenda actually has some work on it today. We'll take a final look at the way forward that the slide is on the screen, and then we'll start working on this gaps and overlap stuff, which is sort of the featured event between now and Toronto. Is there anything that people would like to add to the agenda? Okay. How about updates to people's statements of interest? Anything there? All right. With that, we'll dive right in. What you see on your screen is sort of the semi-final, maybe final, possibly final, perhaps final version of the plans between now through sort of Toronto and on. This is pretty much reflective of what we talked about last week, but it may have gotten tweaked one more time on the ops call. I'm not sure. Anyway, the main activities for us as a working group are to work on that gaps and overlap stuff, and identifying the risk scenarios, or the risk scenario and the skills that we want to assemble to work on that for the assessment that we undertake after Toronto. And so I just sort of wanted to put this in front of you one last time, and at least for a while, we'll consider this the plan. There is there is still a bit of scurrying about going on under the behind the scenes. We're going to meet with Bill Graham in a week or so on the ops call. So this may change again. We don't know, but at least for now, this is the plan. So with that, I kind of want to change gears and start. Where is that little rascal? I know you're there. So there you are. I want to work on this gaps and overlap stuff. Is that type big enough for people to see? Hopefully it is. If not, sing out and I'll make it bigger. This is sort of the rough sketch of what we have been talking about in terms of what we're doing. And as far as I'm concerned, we're starting today to do this work. And I think that this decision, the one about shall we do a survey or shall we do some desk research, I think that one's sort of been made by acclamation, that the first thing we should do is some desk research and then go out to the people we've identified for some confirmation of the conclusions that we've arrived at, rather than going out with a survey. There was absolutely no appetite for doing a survey. So where I'm at right now is to start brainstorming a bit through some of these items here. And as usual, Julie Hammer is ahead of me, so I want to show you some stuff that she sent me, which I thought was really good, just to get your creative juices flowing, and then we'll start expanding on what Julie sent. So hang on a minute while I get that up on the screen. What Julie did was pull out some of the slides from the pictures deck that she thought were relevant to this conversation. And so she just assembled them. But then at the end, she built a new one. So let me just remind you of the slides that we had in the have in the report. This is one of them. That's a newer version of this one, which is the third slide in the deck. This is a pretty old model. This is a model that I built back in the 2001-2002 time frame for a multi-campus, a 50-campus university here in Minnesota. And I was mostly using it in the context of defining our scope vis-a-vis the SSRRT. But it does have a whole lot of detail. Whereas this one is less detailed and gets at these ideas that we were talking about, the difference between what goes on at the core versus the edge being organizational focus and the core being sort of an ecosystem focus, and the glue being the regional or segments or something that essentially provides a mechanism to communicate between the core and the edge. So then what Julie did, which I thought was really neat, was put those two pictures side by side. And she started clumping by color the pieces of what could become a model. And so, Julie, do you want to walk us through this and tell us the tale, or do you want me to stumble along? I'm sort of hoping that you'd walk us
through. Hi, Marky. I'm happy to... essentially, where I started thinking was that we have a diagram with some useful ideas and some headings, and they had this much more detailed table, and it occurred to me that really they were describing one and the same thing in terms of functions. And I started thinking, well, it would be really useful if they were better aligned, because at the moment I pulled out the headings from each one from the diagram and the table, and some of the headings align quite well, but there are some headings in the diagram that don't exist in the table, and one in the table that doesn't exist in the diagram. So I just sort of said to Mikey, you know, these functions would actually form a really good basis for having a conversation about gaps and overlaps, to actually describe gaps and overlaps in terms of functions. But if we try and depict it on a diagram or a table, it would be much easier if they were really well aligned. Back to you, Mikey.
Thanks, Julie. So I wrote back and said, of course, yay, what a great idea. And then promptly got stuck off into stupid Fraxan lawsuit stuff and didn't do anything about it. But it seemed to me that this might be a good starting point for the conversation about the stuff that we're doing here. And so unless people just violently object, I think what I'd like to do is spend the rest of the call sort of combining these two things. Because it dawned on me that one of the problems with that hexagonal picture is that it's It's very pretty, but it's very cumbersome to modify. And so I think that what we might want to do is really work kind of in text outline mode for a while, because it's really easy to change things around. And then when we are comfortable with the clumps that we've put together, we can always turn it back into pretty stuff again. And so what I was thinking we could do, let me just see how this works. Sometimes things paste well into, for those of you who use FreeMind, let me show you a trick, which is that if you go through a text editor, in my case this little text wrangler, and then paste things into FreeMind, you'll find that they paste a lot better. So there's the diagram. And here's the table. I find that if you paste right out of at least Microsoft products, you wind up with a hash if you go straight. But if you strip all the formatting off, it works out pretty well. And now, if we were to combine, let's do a new table. And so there's one that was, this is one of the ones that was in the table, but not in the diagram. Then these diagram ones, not what I intended. Take two. There we go. Now let's compare. So the diagram had more stuff. So these were sort of all in a clump. Risk planning, risk assessment, and monitoring are kind of the classic risk management framework. So let's pull this one down. Put these in that one like that. Then we have education, training, and awareness. And the way Julie was highlighting this is by showing it in a color that doesn't show up on the other side. However, if we go a little deeper into this, I thought I had no, I guess not. Not really. Oh, here we go. I knew it was in there somewhere. So we've got, all right, so that's okay. Let's go back to, hang on a minute. Here's my mumbling, Cheryl. Standards, tools, and techniques, we had three, tech practices, op practices, technology management. Actually, I put them there, but I'm going to debate that. And then have incident response. Going in there, or at least closely related.
Yeah, Mikey, Julie here. Julie Hammer, that is. I guess by putting the same colour, I wasn't trying to say that they were identical, just that they were closely related. So, yeah, they're not necessarily a one-to-one or a one-to-three exact match. So they're just functions that are in the same vein.
Yeah, and so maybe what we do is we kind of put a new title on them. And then, make them peers for now. I still like this hierarchy because these are sort of the trio in the classic risk management framework. Now, security management is a new term. Let's go see what that was. Security management is the... And remember, this model was built for a single organization. And this is maybe the one of the more touchy subjects in the ICANN context, because in this context, I was delivering this report to the CIOs, the chief information officers of 50 campuses, and saying, well, you as the CIOs have a security management job to do. You know, you have to call the shots. You have to come up with a security strategy. You might want to establish a program management office. You might want to come up with metrics, policies, et cetera. In this context, since it's, I think the odds are pretty long that anybody would sit still for a security management function, at least at the core. I don't know quite what to do with this. I mean, it's definitely an edge kind of function. Presumably, you know, folks like Rick and some of the other folks that are sort of at the front lines on this would have security management duties in their job titles. So maybe it does belong in here. But I think we'd have to be careful. Rick is asking, where does risk response fit in the framework? And right now, Rick, that sits down here. It's the this. And so maybe what we do is we come up with, I like risk response. Let's put that in there like that. And the difference, at least in our minds, when we built that model way back in, 12 years ago, was that there are folks that respond, and there are folks that manage those folks, and the managers of the security function have jobs that they need to do. And this was the list that we came up with at that time. And the tricky bit is that, this is a single organization model. And the reason it fell out of the... Well, I don't know if there was a reason. I just didn't include it. So what do people think? What do you want to do with this little rascal? That's the, sort of our first puzzler of this new model that we're building. Any ideas? Rick is saying, in reality, when a risk materializes, it's an incident. Yeah, I think that's right. I think this risk response clump is sort of the, the stuff that we're talking about there, Rick. whereas the security management function is presumably guiding the deployment of all this other stuff. You know, what we were dealing with was an accountability issue where nobody was accountable for for essentially managing the security functions in this 50 university system. And what we were trying to do is describe what somebody ought to be doing. And then going out to this coalition of, you know, just about as college presidents are a pretty independent bunch. They sort of don't like it much when the central administrator marches in and tells them what to do. And so what we were trying to say is, well, this is something that falls mostly in your bailiwick. But if you're not doing it at all, that's a problem. And I suppose that we could take a similar line here, although I think that we as ICANN community, I mean, in the context I was doing this before, you know, I had a legislatively mandated central administration function that I represented, whereas in the ICANN world, not so much. Rick is saying, here at CIRA, our security function is a key stakeholder in our risk management process. They contribute, monitor, and respond to a significant number of our risks. Key stakeholder and collaborator of risk management. So, Rick, is there somebody to whom the risk or the security function reports? And if so...
Yes.
Rick, go ahead.
So it's Rick Keller. So, yeah, the security management reports into our IT department. The risk management is separate. I'm responsible for corporate risk. So they certainly contribute a significant number of the risks and class of risk. But they're not the only element of our risk management. I think in the context of what we're doing, largely we're looking at IT security risk, not broader sort of business risk and that type of thing.
Yeah. So you're responsible for the risk stuff across all of CIRA, not just the technical risk.
That's right.
Yeah. And
but,
that's one of the problems with this particular definition, is that this one is aimed at an IT function. And so it's technical. Now, some of this stuff could map across into a broader risk function like yours, but yeah, that's a key distinction. I mean, one of the things we could do is, for now, we could staple this list into the outline, because I think that one of the things that's useful about a list like this is it's going to remind us that we have a discussion that we have to have. Oops. Because if we then change this to get rid of, maybe just get rid of the overall, get rid of the IT thing. Does that finesse the issue that you're raising well enough, Rick? Just drop an IT out of this? In a way... Oops, sorry, my stupid email program is whining. I'll quit. way, that's part of the puzzle that we were formed to address, is who's responsible? In a way, these are easier. It's pretty easy to say, well, frontline mitigation is going to happen in the organizations that are on the firing line. The puzzler is who guides that effort, and to what extent does that guidance need to be coordinated across a lot of organizations? And I think that's where people often get testy. I know that's where the college presidents got annoyed, was when I would march in and say, well, we've got sort of an issue of sovereignty that we kind of need to deal with here. And the college presidents would say, no, it's simple. I rule my kingdom. I am the total in-charge person for my college, and I will give up no sovereignty to any other college president in the system. And then we would have the discussion, well, the trouble is that your security deficiencies may open up risks that affect your colleagues in that constituency, so you may want to consider ways that you can do that and still maintain your views about sovereignty. And I think that in a way, that's kind of what we're dealing with here, too. Rick, go ahead. You may be muted.
So, yeah, I was.
Go ahead.
Kind of moving off the security management, and it comes up in Patrick Jones's text comments as well, and it's about the oversight committee, and it touches on what you're saying there as well, Mikey, about a board president saying he rules his kingdom, and in this case there isn't any one king. So from a monitoring perspective, in addition to having distributed security management across the internet, you've got distributed governance monitoring challenge. So, the formation, typically you would have a risk committee that risk management is reporting into, and they're providing oversight and kind of validating those risks that have been identified and the plans around them. So we're going to need to think about how that works as well, and governance ties into monitoring.
Yeah, governance ties into a lot of stuff. Let's see. Cheryl has also got. Let me read these comments into the transcript, just so we've got that. So Patrick kind of kicked off some of this when he said, within an ICANN internal context, the ICANN security team also performs this function, in that we coordinate across the organization internally, contribute and monitor, but also support our IT department and provide an auditing function. Patrick also goes on to say, we also have a reporting function to the ICANN Board Risk Committee. Julie then said, it may be that when the Board DNS RMF Working Group produces their risk management framework, hopefully based on functions, that we may need to come back and align, adapt this framework that we produce. Yeah, I think that's right, Julie. And then Cheryl is saying, why not have security metrics as a subset of operational in our context then? And I could take that as a friendly amendment. Do we have metrics in here yet? Let's put it in here as a placeholder. Now, it could be that what we're getting is a jar that's got an awful lot of stuff going into it. You may want to comb that out a little bit. I kind of want to go back to the governance question for a minute, because I think that's an interesting puzzler. I think governance is where the conflicts between inside all these organizations and across all these organizations may get interesting, and maybe that's where it gets resolved. Rick, you're kind of leading us in here. When the governance function was formed, what was its charter? What was its job to do in terms of this cross-organizational stuff? Can you expand on that a little bit?
Sure. So, Rick Feller again. Governance committee would typically be in our organization, you know, we're 10 different business units. I've got a variety of position and functional background, but it's really only 3 or 4 people. So it's committee, and its charter really is to be an overseer of the risk registry, to be able to independently kind of help validate the risk assessments, and to validate the risk plans to, you know, mitigate or take other action to reduce the impact of risk or probability of risks. That's essentially it, you know, but they're an important part of an ongoing process.
So in the ICANN, well, in the DNS security, stability, reliability, resiliency ecosystem, is there a group like this today? Or at least, is there a group that thinks of themselves as doing this today? Crickets.
Hey, well, Mikey, it's Patrick.
Go ahead, Patrick.
I think individually, participants in the ICANN space do this, or I would think many of them do. So my comments earlier were that internally within ICANN, security team performs this function. But from Rick's comments, Sierra does this as well. I would assume that most of the major registry operators do this. Others in the space do it as well. So it's done individually, but there's not a sort of overseeing entity that does it, unless I've misunderstood what you're asking.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd use the word overseeing, but, you know, I'm just curious if there's anybody that thinks of themselves as the equivalent of this kind of a committee that is cross-organizational. And I can't think of one, but I wanted to make sure that there wasn't. You know, for example, would DNSORC stand up and say, well, we kind of do that? Now, I'm not a member of that, so I don't know what they do, but would they think of themselves that way, Patrick, or anybody else who knows them?
So I'm not sure that they would, but this may be an area where it would be helpful to reach out to someone that's active in OARC and ask them the question.
Yeah. Well, and this could be the sort of desk research process. I mean, what we could do is we could posit this thing out there and once we've sort of described it, ask a few likely candidates like DNSORC, you know, whether they feel like this is part of their pile or not. I think we need two of these things. Let me think about this. And I don't know if it makes sense to put all that pile underneath this. I think that these are different things just by the nature of what they are. If I were in the college system, I'd be saying, yeah, you, the college president, you should have one of these for your organization, for sure. But then there's some sort of meta version of that that you ought to have. And in fact, we created one. We didn't set it up as a governance committee because that would have raised too many hackles. But we did form a group that was pretty similar to this, that was system-wide. And encouraged it mostly to be a facilitator of collaboration and builder of trust rather than oversight, because oversight made people too testy. Let's see if I've missed anything in the chat. Yeah, I think Cheryl's in there. Maybe there should be a supergroup facilitation or SharePoint at least. So maybe that's maybe governance is too hard a term. What can we call this besides governance? Call it a SharePoint for now. Coordination. Oh, I like that. That was from Julie Hammer. Then, having done that, we've probably got some things that I'm moving that sort of up, starting to rank these by core to edge. A little bit. That may be a fool's errand. I may stop doing that. But at least to kind of get the notion across that these are starting to become sort of different things. How am I doing on time? Well, we've got some time yet. Anything else on what we've got on the screen so far? And then I'll circle back to those diagrams and see if we need to staple in anything else. Okay, let me go back and take a look at some of this stuff. I mean, we spent a lot of time on the front line definition of incident response because that was a problem that the legislature had with what we were doing. We weren't doing a real good job there. There was an interesting conversation about compliance. again, this was sort of a sovereignty issue. And Rick, in terms of the structure that you've got there at CIRA, where did this compliance stuff fall out? Did it wind up in that committee, or was it tending to be more decentralized? How does that work?
So Rick Keller, I got to think about that, ponder it. I can't say that we have in the context of risk management, we don't have a compliance monitoring function. A discrete function that way, I guess. Certainly if we are dealing with an incident, our incident management practices and process kicks in. And depending on the severity of it, we've got protocol that will follow that. Can you elaborate, Mikey, on a little bit more compliance?
Yeah. What we were dealing with was, again, a 50-campus deal. And where we wound up with all this was there was a model where at the core, at the central administration, it was sort of our job to come up with good ideas and promulgate those ideas out to the 50 institutions. And so, we developed a whole bunch of tools and techniques and so on and so forth. And this was sort of the list of things, the clumps that we tended to focus on in the central administration. And then what we would do is we would get, I think I can make this a little bit bigger. There, that's good. There was really no appetite at all in the college and university system for a policing function to go out to the 50 campuses and check and see if they were in compliance. And so instead what we would do is build essentially a compliance toolkit that the campuses could use themselves to self-audit how they were doing on implementing all this stuff. And then the committee would keep an eye on those self-audits. And, again, it got dicey as to whether people wanted to share those and so on. Oh, Patrick's got something in the chat. Hang on a minute. Oh, Patrick, you've got your hand up. Why don't you go ahead and...
I don't want to open up a can of worms, but please disregard the word DNS cert in this document, but I think the content of it is still useful. This is a collaboration analysis report from a workshop that was done in April of 2010. Some of the participants from the DSSA were at that workshop. So I point to it as an example of some of the things that were discussed back then about the need for coordination and collaboration and the types of qualities of the entities that currently exist in the space. So I'll leave it at that.
Sounds to me like I need a notes jar. I can steal.
The document is at the top of the link, and if there was a handy way to drag and drop the PDF link directly into chat, I would do it, but
hang on,
having
I can get
difficulty.
That into the... Oops. I want to see if I can just pull it. Ah, that's the problem. Okay, so this is the report. Got it. Okay, so I can copy the link location for the report. And put it in here. So this is the operational. I'll just skip the DNS cert thing. Operational requirements and collaboration analysis. And staple that. Oh, that's ugly. Oh, that's close enough. I can fix that later. Anyway, it captures and there's a whole bunch of good stuff on that page. Wow, look at all this stuff. I'm reading the page that Patrick points us to.
Again, with the qualifier that it's not about DNS cert. I'm just raising this as it's historical
right.
information that's been collected in the past, and take it for what it's worth.
Right, but if we expunge that word and also expunge the notion that this is something that ICANN ought to run, it's still a pretty good bulleted list. I think I'm going to steal that bulleted list, if it's okay with you, Patrick.
Yep.
Okay, I'm going to steal those and staple them in here. Because I think that's a good list. It's kind of tall, but there you go. So this is a list of things that it's pretty incident-focused, but it's not a bad list of things to think about. Cool. You know, I think in a way this is right at the heart of why we were formed, is to try and resolve the dilemma of getting this kind of stuff done in a way that is acceptable to the community, which is in a way a lot like what I ran into with the college presidents. Hadn't thought about that until now, but there you go. Okay, now... Cheryl was saying, in the spirit of that, it's fine. Patrick, sure. Understood. Patrick, signed cert run by ICANN works fine. That was one that probably needs a little unpacking. Cheryl, you want to jump on and unpack Patrick, signed cert run by ICANN works fine? Sorry to put you on the spot.
I understood what Cheryl meant.
Okay.
But.
All right. Well, you can unpack it. Cheryl's either on mute or... Oh, there she is. She's very faint.
I seem to be on mute.
Oh, there you go. Now I can hear you.
Am I this faint now?
You're very faint.
Okay. Sam
extremely faint.
Means without. Sam's without.
I can tell that you're talking, Cheryl, but I can't hear the words. It may be that your phone is dying. Or you may be trying to preserve the slumber of your spousal unit and speaking very quietly. Or something. Anyway, I don't want to belabor it. If you want to retype it in a longer version. Oh, sans equals without. Okay, so understood. Patrick, without cert. I understood what sans meant. I still don't understand the sentence. Understood, Patrick, So Patrick is the committee? No, sorry. Understood, Patrick, comma. Without a... Oh, so you're saying that something run by ICANN would work okay, Cheryl? I didn't think so. That's why I wanted a little unpacking. Well, we've got plenty of time to figure this one out. Okay, Rosella says, that works out, had a lot... Oh, you were there. Cool. And then Patrick's got the right... Oh, good. That's the right link. Let me get that in the notes. Because that link that I picked up is wrong. Yeah, there we go. Get rid of this one. Okay. I think, you know, we're coming up on 5 minutes to the hour. Let me just shrink some of this down so we can see it all. Make that one. And that one we know cold. All right, so now we've got the whole thing. Let's go back to Julie's chart for just a minute and see if we've picked off the big stuff anyway. Yeah, I think we've got all of this at least started in our conversation. So I think with that, I'm going to declare victory for today. I'll publish this out to the list, and I'll start doing status reports and all that good stuff, and maybe we'll reel in some people that have been slumbering. Because this ought to get people fairly excited when we publish a list like that. So maybe just to wrap this up, Patrick, at that meeting where they came up with all those good ideas, did they come up at all, having not read it yet, did they come up with any strategies on how to move forward? Or was the presumption that an ICANN cert was the way to move forward and this was fleshing out what it would do?
So, Mike, it's Patrick again. So the collaboration analysis workshop results were posted for comment along with some other material that was in the first link that I put in the chat, which then later became this, if I'm recalling correctly, that fed into the DNS cert concept paper. But, you know, later that was disavowed and determined that was not the right path to follow down. Either way, the discussion from this workshop in D.C. brought up some really relevant, useful material that I think has either been somewhat forgotten or it's still relevant today. So that was really why I included it in the link, is if the DSSA is talking about these things, it seemed to trigger in my mind some of the same conversations that came up back then. And why not look to what was discussed a couple of years ago and see, is it some of that still relevant, or have things changed enough that there's some interesting new things that could be identified?
Yeah. Well, I love mining work, good work that was done by others before us. And we have the advantage of being able to see into the future, which they couldn't. And so maybe what we can do is extract a lot of the knowledge and wisdom from that and avoid the pitfall that they fell into and get the best of both worlds. So that seems like a good thing to me. Okay, it's top of the hour, folks, and I think this is a good spot to stop. We'll pick this up again. This is basically the conversation we're going to have for a couple of more weeks. I think the thing that we want to start thinking about between now and next week's call is some way to organize this so that then we can start doing the desk research that says which organizations do which of these things. You know, I think that in many cases, especially when we get down to risk response, the list of organizations that actually respond to risk is huge. It's, you know, essentially all of the registries, all of the registrars, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas some of these other ones, it may be a little bit sparser. Rick's not going to be with us. Dang, you were a big contributor today, Rick. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you in September. Anyway, with that, Natalie, I think you can wrap up the call, and we'll reconvene in a week. Thanks, folks.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
You may now stop the recording. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Mikey.
Bye.